Gator baseball gets a big season series win over the Miami Hurricanes with their 14th season series victory in the last 16 season series. Gator basketball also picking up a big win over Alabama, setting themselves up very nicely for a postseason tournament run. This is the In All Kinds of Weather forecast. Welcome back to the In All Kinds of Weather forecast. I am your host, Neil Schulman. You can follow me on Twitter at All Kinds Weather and on Instagram at All Kinds Weather Blog. You can also follow the show on Twitter at IAKOW Forecast. As you may have noticed, we are becoming more active on YouTube. More shows are coming. We have already dropped several in the last week. So if you haven't already done so, be sure to hit that subscribe button, hit that like button, and be sure to comment your thoughts on what we're discussing today below. Also got Ethan Howick back with us. You may remember him from, I guess, kind of informally interning for us last spring with baseball and softball analysis. He's back this spring. We intend to feature him a bit more regularly moving forward. So Ethan, welcome back and glad to have you back.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, always.
How was your trip to the Miami game?
Oh yeah, that was an experience for sure. Stadium itself is pretty old and run down. Those Marklite shakes though are famous for a reason. They're very creative with their flavors. They're all delicious. I had a Columbus the first night, which is a double Oreo with double sprinkles. I had a hybrid sugar cane red velvet on Saturday, which is a vanilla shake with mashed up red velvet cake and cookie dough pieces. And on Sunday, I had a Joe Z hybrid, which is chocolate shake with fudge, Oreos, and marshmallows. All three of them were spectacular. A couple of notes for those who might want to go in the future. The seating is really weird there in that 80% of it or so is general admission, which means like sitting 10 rows behind home plate costs the same as sitting high in the third base bleachers. Kind of like a high school stadium, honestly. They claim it seats 5,000. There's no way that's accurate. Kind of like their football attendance numbers. I think more realistically, it only seats like 3,500, maybe 3,750 or so. But to claim it seats 4,000 is pushing it. And at least half the fans there were Gators. So if you're a Gator in South Florida, you will have to wait 2 years for this opportunity. But 2026, March comes around, Florida goes back there, 100% go. Oh, and I got a souvenir too.
Oh, that's awesome. I heard that you caught that.
Yeah, that was
on TV.
You could see it on TV. It didn't look like you could see much of it until the hand kind of came out of nowhere. I kind of like reverse Ricky Pearsall'd it. Like if you remember his catch against Charlotte where he one hands it like that. I kind of went like even more like out though, kind of just like backhanding it. And I pushed my feet off the ground and like leaped for it. So you could kind of see like the hand coming up and like doing a windshield wiper motion. The ball was like falling. And at the last second, I kind of like just snatched it like that. Cool. It was just like a heat of the moment thing. I didn't think, I just saw it falling near me and I just grabbed it.
Miami fans during the game.
How are Miami fans?
Yeah.
I mean, most of them were fine. I think some of it is that it's baseball and they kind of have low expectations for it. Relatively speaking, there were two annoying ones. One of them was this like Patton Oswalt looking weirdo who was not very happy about the fact that I was doing their left, right chant back at them. But I mean, that wasn't really, I wasn't doing it to annoy Miami, at least at first. I wasn't doing it to annoy Miami fans. I was doing it more just like for the other Gator fans around me because they were, you know, all having a good time. Here's that guy, by the way.
What would you say is the split between Miami and Florida fans at the game?
It's probably 60-40 Florida.
Yeah.
70-30 maybe. Hard to tell because you don't know which one's like in orange or Gators, or which ones are Canes.
So there's more Gator fans at the interesting.
Definitely a Florida home game. Definitely some Miami fans, but more Florida than Miami for sure.
Well, that's good to hear that we traveled down there.
Yeah, no, it was
fans down there too. So
was that?
We also have fans down in Miami.
We do. We have a lot of a lot of grads down there. I think that's what most of it was. I mean, you're not going to travel from Gainesville down there, obviously. So, I mean, I think there was like an Orlando Gator club thing there, but that's a very, very small number. Most of them were player families and just local South Florida, Fort Lauderdale, Palm Beach, Miami area Gator fans. So Gator fans there got to see something that a lot of Gator fans before them have seen. That's Florida beating Miami. Florida has now beaten Miami 40 of the last 52 games and 14 of the last 16 season series. Ethan, Friday night win, Saturday afternoon loss, Sunday afternoon win. Gators win the series 2 out of 3. First things first, general takeaways from the series W. What stood out to you in big picture? What does this mean for the Gators?
What stood out to me was the power that we showed in all three games. I mean, 3 home runs in the first game, 5 in the third game. In the second game, we still got a homer from Dale Thomas in the top of the 5th inning. It showed me that really we have multiple players who can hit home runs, and it's not just Jack Caglione, it's not just Colby Shelton. It's guys like Dale Thomas, Tyler Shelnut, and it's really a promising thing to see in an early test in Miami. I know Miami's unranked and they're not quite as good as they used to be, but it's still a very tough test going down there, facing them in 2 out of 3 games and then winning 2 out of 3 games, which is very important. I also saw some impressive outings from guys like Cade Fisher and Jack Caglione. Obviously, Caglione a career high in 11 strikeouts. Cade Fisher, yes, he gave up a few runs, but he was able to kind of mitigate the damage and not, he didn't walk a single batter in that game, which I think is very important. We saw guys like Ryan Slater dominate in the middle relief. In the first game, he pitched 3.1 innings, did not allow a hit or run, and he actually faced the minimum in batters because he did give up a couple walks hit by pitch, but he's got the players out by double plays, and I think that's really important when you have a guy like Ryan Slater who can do very well in that middle relief category. And, of course, Miami did sort of strike back a little bit as guys like Torres hit a couple of home runs. But of course, we were able to always answer back, though, right after Miami scored, it seemed like all weekend. So it really showed that we're able to just answer back with our power. And in the second game, all freshmen pitched for the Gators in that game. Yes, they didn't fare as well. That is what freshmen do sometimes. They give up runs, and that happens. And I think we still have plenty of freshmen on the roster that can put up zeros in the future. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, the big takeaway from the weekend is, you know, it's got to be the low-hanging fruit, Jack Caglione. But Jem on the mound on Sunday, 6 innings, scattered 3 pretty harmless hits, 11 strikeouts, 0 runs allowed, continuing to just mash at the plate, 2 homers in 3 games, a dead even 500 average at the plate in those 3 games, 7 for 14. Actually brings him down now to 478 on the year in the last week, which is just insane to think about. I mean, 11 games and you're hitting 478.
That's... When I saw Jack Caglione hit that home run, and then the previous inning when he was on the mound, he struck out the side, I immediately thought to myself, we all know who this reminds me of and many others of is Shohei Ohtani in college baseball. I mean, there's not many guys – even if there are players who can pitch and hit, there's not many that hit a home run and then strike out the side and control the fastball around the plate the way Jack Caglione did. And that set up his changeup, which Kevin O'Sullivan said his changeup was the best he has ever seen it as a Gator. So we saw more than just what Jack Caglione is known for. We saw him pitch very efficiently, and he did strike out batters like he usually does. And, of course, we did see the power from him. So I think that is – of course, huge, because we're going to need him. And of course, we're going to need other players to step up. Like in game 2, Kurland and Jack Caglione sort of had a quiet game. We did lose the game, but we did still see guys like Dale Thomas with 4 RBIs in the game, which, yes, he's had sort of a slower start to the season, but we're going to need guys like him and Colby Shelton and Dale Thomas and Brody Dene and those kinds of players to step up if they do have quiet games. Do you agree?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think that this team is going to go as far as Caglione takes them, but there's also something to be said for the fact that there is a lot of talent around him. I mean, Miami is not a great team, but they're also not a terrible team too. I mean, they'll probably be an NCAA tournament team. So, I mean, this is a good for those, because I mean, we try to bring in new Gator baseball fans, because I know everyone loves Gator football and some Gator basketball. We're trying to get more of y'all into be Gator baseball fans. So for the new Gator baseball fans who want a comparison, Miami is probably in the vein of like a Connecticut last year, and that they'll be a team that you'll see in the postseason. They're probably not going to do much damage. I wouldn't put them in the same category as Texas Tech. I don't think they're quite there yet from a pitching standpoint, but Miami is a team that you will have to beat in the earlier rounds of the NCAA tournament. So it was certainly a test for Florida. And other guys, as you mentioned, they stepped up. Florida hitting 5 homers in the third game. In fact, let's run through it all real quick. First game, Friday night, Miami actually had an early 2-1 lead. Luke Heyman, though, hit what turned out to be the game-winning homer to give Florida a 4-2 lead. Ryan Slater then comes on. Not a great start to his outing, but this is something that really impressed me. He threw 5 straight balls to start off. He's clearly rattled. Heyman goes out, talks to him, settles him down. Slater gets out of the jam. And then Curlin and Kags go back-to-back, and that was pretty much all she wrote. Brandon Neely then finished it off. And then Saturday, we saw that the pitching, if it's not there, it can be bad enough to kind of sink Florida before the game ever really gets started. I mean, Liam Peterson is going to be someone that I think is going to have a lot of success at Florida, but he just didn't have it on Saturday. He just wasn't there. I mean, he gave up 5 runs in the first couple of innings, and Florida couldn't recover from that. Florida did score some runs, but I mean, you can't put Florida down a 5-0 hole and expect them to win the game. And then Sunday, Florida really showed its power, to your point earlier. I think in a way they hadn't all year. I mean, Miami starter Eric Hernandez is one of the better starting pitchers Florida's going to see this year. I don't know why he's their Sunday guy. I think he is probably their number 2 at worst, if not their best pitcher. But Florida hit him hard. 5 homers in that Sunday game. Miami's park is not that shallow. I mean, it's 330 down the line and 400 to dead center, just like Condren is. So not super easy to hit the ball out of there. Florida did that 5 times on Sunday. One thing, though, I do think that Gator fans need to keep an eye on. Cade Kurland is someone I'm a big fan of. He didn't look that great in Saturday or Sunday. He was 1-for-10 at the plate in those 2 games, 7 strikeouts. And some of those at-bats just didn't look good. He didn't look comfortable at the plate. And Florida still scored a lot of runs. Florida still scored 7 runs and 6 runs and won one of those games. So Florida, even without production from its leadoff spot, Florida does show that they have enough power in their bats to get the job done. So that was my takeaway. Ethan, I mean, there were causes for concern throughout the game and throughout the weekend, because Florida did lose a game and they did give up some runs. But what do you stood out as something that Florida most has to work on?
What they really have to work on, in my opinion, is, yes, the pitchers are going to give up some base runners, whether it be by walks, hit by pitches, or hits. But in my opinion, they need to work on most is not allowing too many runs to come into the plate and giving up as less runs as you can, which we didn't really see that even in the first game with guys like Cade Fisher, who, yes, he gave up a few base runners, but he also gave up most of these base runners and he let them score. And in the second game, Liam Peterson too. Yes, he didn't give up as many base runners as you would think, only 3 hits, 2 walks, but he still gave up 5 runs with those 3 hits and 2 walks. So I think getting out of trouble, allowing as little runs as possible, is something that I think the Gators need to work on. And that also includes, in my opinion, starting bullpen pitchers that actually have proven to do well, especially freshmen like Phillip Potts, Robert Satin too. So that's just what I think they need to work on mostly. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, there's a difference between giving up 6 hits and 0 runs and 3 hits and 3 runs. I mean, obviously, not just the fact that the numbers are obviously different, but the effect is so different too, in that if you scatter the bunch of base hits throughout the game, like Kags gave up 3 hits, but they were all harmless singles. He didn't give up the long ball and he didn't give up any back-to-back. You're able to get over the fact that you just gave up a hit and lock in on the next batter and act like it didn't happen and just get out of the jam. Of course, there is a difference in that you have to go from your windup to a stretch, which is something that some pitchers are more comfortable than others. But yeah, I mean, when there are base runners on, it is a different situation. You have to be cognizant of the fact that there are base runners, but you also have to not let it affect the way that you pitch to the next batter. You have to focus on that batter and focus on getting him out so that one mistake pitch that got hit hard or even bad luck, like just like a swinging bunt that just dies halfway between home plate and third, that you made a good pitch. The guy could only top it with his bat, but he's on first base anyway. Stuff like that. You just got to get over it. Next batter, focus on him and get out of the jam. So something I think Florida has to work on for sure there.
Another thing I think they need to work on is getting ahead of batters. They've been starting some of those counts behind 2-0 and 3-0, especially Liam Peterson on Saturday. Yes, you are going to see that from a freshman, but it would be nice if he could have maybe started some better counts against batters. And also, if
you're going to pitch strikes, you're saying, yeah.
Yeah. If you're going to pitch Slater and Neely in one night, maybe Sully should bring in bullpen arms that have proven that they can get scoreless innings. And we do have plenty of freshmen who can do that, like Grayson Smith, Robert Satin, and like I mentioned earlier, Philipott. So I do think, adding on to what I said earlier, those are some things that they need to work on. But not really much hitting-wise. Yes, the power started off a little bit slower, but it has come to life this past weekend. So I agree with you on that.
Yeah, I mean, Florida, I guess I would like to see them be able to string together more rallies. I mean, Florida relies a lot on a long ball. I'm worried if maybe there's a night where the wind is just dying, or you know, the balls are dying in the outfield because the wind is blowing in. Maybe you're facing a great pitcher, you can't hit the long ball. I'd like to see Florida be able to get like four or five base hits in six batters or so. You know, just so you have another reliable way of scoring runs. But then again, the season's only 11 games old and they haven't really been challenged yet. So I guess like when you can hit home runs, why would you not try to? So, I mean, I don't necessarily want to call it a weakness. It's just something I'd like to see more of moving forward when the Gators are playing better opponents. I wonder how they're going to be able to do and maybe take different approaches at the plate, like maybe work pitch counts more, maybe take the attitude of a walk is as good as a hit because it does get you on base. Obviously, you'd like to hit the home run, yes, or you'd like to hit one in a gap so you could get a double or, you know, get two or three bases out of it. But getting on base is something, and consistently getting on base, like I just talked about, like we just talked about with the pitchers a moment ago, how you can give up a base hit, but then get the next three guys out, no one cares. So stranding runners, and then convert or inversely for Florida, making sure that all their base runners or as many of them as possible come home to score. Because again, you're not going to get that many chances against the likes of Arkansas, who Florida plays, of LSU. Even FSU looks better this year. So although you won't see one of their better pitchers, but I mean, in SEC play, when you're facing the best that all the SEC teams have to offer, you're going to need to be able to score in more ways than just the long ball. So not something that I want to say is a weakness. Florida hasn't been challenged in that department yet, but something I'd like to see them be able to succeed in as we go forward.
I do agree. And I'm going to point back to, I think, the Columbia series when Jack Caglione went 4-for-4 in one of the games. And he didn't – they were all singles. I think three of them were infield singles. So that is something that we have done a little bit. But I agree, when you're behind, you want to start maybe just trying to find a base runner instead of just swinging for the fences. So I do agree.
Yeah, I mean, Florida, again, you can't say that – I know they have three losses, but you can't really say that Florida's been challenged yet, because anything can happen in one given night. The St. John's game – yes, it was highly irritating. It's one game. That didn't prove a damn thing. And, you know, losing a midweek game to Stetson, you know, again, for newer Gator baseball fans, Stetson baseball is not the same as Stetson football. That's more along the lines of, I guess, like a maybe like a Kansas State or a South Carolina in football, in that, no, they're not the top tier, but I mean, they've hosted regionals before. They've had that, you know, they've been a top 16 team in baseball before, and they do recruit some of the better players from the state of Florida. So it's not like that's a completely embarrassing showing. And again, Florida will continue to face more and more challenges as they go on the SEC schedule. But Again, there's just that's the beauty of it, right? Like, it's such a long season that even 11 games won't give you any defining conclusions about the team.
Oh, and that's why in the D1 baseball poll, we've only dropped two spots since opening day, even when we've lost three games against Stetson, Miami, and St. John's. So I do agree with you on that. And we're not really going to know more about what this team is capable of until SEC play. We get a big test coming up against Texas A&M. They are, I think, number 7 in the D1 baseball poll. Yeah. So that's going to be a huge early SEC test. And it is good that we do get them at home on that weekend over spring break. So I think that's very important for this team to sort of get that early ranked test earlier than what it usually is, which they usually don't get tested until like April most of the time.
Right. I mean, March, I guess, is always going to be the Miami series. Usually they're better than they are this year. But, I mean, nonetheless, Florida is going to have a schedule that is just absolutely loaded with teams in the top 25. I'm pulling it up, of course. Now it doesn't want to load itself, but there it is. So Florida will play Arkansas, who is number 2. They'll play in weekend series, by the way. They'll play 3 games against number 2 Arkansas, against number 3 LSU, against number 7 Texas A&M, number 8 Tennessee, number 9 Vanderbilt. Yeah. That's a lot of games against top 10 opponents. So, and number 21 South Carolina for a cupcake, for a breather. Number 21 South Carolina. So Florida is going to lose games because they play enough of them against these top teams. And as we talk about all the time, baseball is weird in that there's so much luck that goes into it, and the better team doesn't win the game a lot of the time. So again, Florida will be challenged. They will naturally be forced to face these, I don't want to call them weaknesses again, because we don't know, but they'll be forced to face these question marks, and we'll have answers to them pretty soon.
I do agree with you on that. Of course, midweek games aren't necessarily much of a test. They're more of just trying out different ways to win ball games, playing different players. And I do think, though, we are playing decent midweek opponents. I mean, Florida Atlantic, decent. UCF is okay this year. So I do think that it's not really getting tested, but we are kind of slowly getting tested as the season goes along.
And we'll play FSU 3 times in the midweek. Yeah. So, I mean, again, a lot to be decided, a lot to be determined, a lot for us to see and watch unfold. But so far, Ethan, early returns are good. 8-3 against the schedule Florida's played maybe is a little underwhelming, but it's certainly not bad. I mean, you won the series against Miami. One stray loss to Stetson and one stray loss to St. John's doesn't really prove a whole lot of anything. Florida, I mean, all it really proved is that if you have a bad outing from your starting pitcher, you're probably going to lose the game, which I think we all knew anyway. Cade Fisher didn't have a good start against St. John's. Liam Peterson didn't have a good start against Miami. And then the midweek, lower level pitching is going to have that happen sometimes.
Those are all expected too. I mean, Liam Peterson is a freshman. Cade Fisher made his first ever Friday night start. So I do think not expected, but they're not expected to go out there and put up 7 shutout innings. So that's my thoughts on that. And yes, I do agree. 8-3 isn't the best start we could have ever had, but I do think we could have started way worse. Like some other teams, for example. I mean, I know Vandy's kind of bounced back a little bit, but they had a pretty rough start in the beginning of the season.
They did have a rough start. I mean, Vandy right now has the same number of losses as we have. They've played 2 more games because 2 of ours against St. John's got rained out. But, I mean, Arkansas has lost a couple of games. They're number 2 in the country. Wake Forest lost a game to UNC Greensboro, which, I mean, that's a bad loss. That's worse than Stetson. Probably it's hard to really judge, but that's probably more in line with like the loss to St. John's for us. That's not a good look. And yet they're still 10-1 and number 1 in the country. So that is going to happen for those new baseball followers. It's just something we have to just get used to, because you play enough games in baseball, you play 60, 70 games a season, you're going to lose some. So final thoughts, Ethan, on the Gators win over Miami and what you expect looking forward. As we know, it's going to be a tough SEC slate. But what are you looking to see get decided and get answered in the next couple weeks?
Well, I'm looking to see the bullpen, for example, who's going to step up in front of guys like Neely and Slater. So I do think I'm looking for that. And really, I'm looking to see this team not just lose a couple games, but actually sort of win out up until SEC play. I'm a little bit over losing all these midweek games. I want us to kind of win the rest of these games in the non-conference, go into that Texas A&M game with extra momentum to start SEC play, and then hopefully win a series, kind of put out a statement that we're going to be a force in the SEC by beating the number seven team. So that's what I want to see more from this team, is just finding ways to win games, close games too, because we're going to have a lot of close games in a 56 game baseball schedule. And really, like you said, 56 games, you have different starters, different pitchers each game. You're going to lose a game every once in a while. That's going to happen. So I agree with you on those losses, but I do want to see this team just not lose any more games in the non-conference slate and start off the Texas A&M series well, and really just hopefully maybe steal a series that they aren't expected to, like LSU maybe, for example, or at Vanderbilt, and then just kind of head into the conference tournament with a solid SEC record and then go from there.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, 56-game regular season plus the SEC tournament, which can add – it can add 5 or 6 games to your season, depending on how you're doing it. But that's going to do it for the baseball part of this show. But the Gators are certainly in a spot that I think is favorable for them right now. You've done your job in the non-conference. Just don't slip up against St. Mary's. You got to win at least 2 out of those 3. Preferably get the sweep, but you absolutely have to win 2 of those next 3. Get yourself into SEC play against Texas A&M on a good note, and then go from there.
And hopefully win over FSU too.
Well, that's always expected. Yeah. I talked with Ty Evans and Tyler Shellman after the Miami series, and they said, you know, at this point, we show up, we play the team in front of us, but when it's Miami, we beat them. That's just what we do. I have a feeling that they have the exact same mentality about FSU. So definitely look forward to seeing the Gators continue to do that against the Noles.
For sure. FSU is going to be a different kind of test for this team. Obviously another midweek game, but this time a midweek game against a rival, a team that I think is 10-0 right now. So if FSU goes undefeated up until then, we could be the one that gives them their first loss of the season.
And that would return the favor for 2020 in a way. We do kind of owe them for that. Although we haven't lost many games to them. I guess they had to win sometime. But yeah, good spot for Gator baseball. And with that, we'll turn to Gator basketball. Now to finish up the show, it is a few hours later. Had to throw this into the show though. Could not go too long without talking about this. We seem to have lost the last couple minutes of the baseball show with Ethan, but I guess I'll replace that now by talking about the Gators' big beatdown of Alabama on the basketball court. 105-87, just a monster performance for Florida in several different ways, and a nice bit of payback on the Crimson Tide. Not only did Florida avenge that loss in Tuscaloosa a few weeks ago, this loss pretty much finished off Alabama's chances to win even a share of an SEC title. Crimson Tide now 12-5 in the SEC with just 1 game left. South Carolina is 12-4 with 2 games left, and Tennessee is 13-3 with 2 games left. And those two teams play each other, so one of them is going to have to win. Doesn't look good for Alabama. Mathematically speaking, Bama does have a chance to hypothetically claim a share of the title, but even that's unlikely. So for all intents and purposes, this loss just cost Alabama an SEC championship. How did it happen? Well, Florida kind of got punched in the mouth, literally and figuratively, in Tuscaloosa. Alabama set the precedent in that game in Tuscaloosa that they wanted to get physical with Florida. Don't know that the Gators were truly ready for that. Florida did hang in there. Florida did play well. Florida did play hard, forced overtime. It was a close game. Couple things go Florida's way. Maybe the Gators do pull it out, but it just seemed like Alabama always had an answer, and they were just always a step ahead of Florida and always made the tough plays when they had to have them. Not this time. Florida was ready this time. Gators matched Alabama's intensity down low. They played hard defensively. I don't know that I'd say they played a great game defensively just because Alabama did put up 87 points, but Florida played hard defensively, forced 13 turnovers. Florida also handled that ghost screen very well that Alabama does, where a player kind of acts like he's setting a screen, but instead just keeps running for an open spot on the floor. No, Florida was not going to let that beat them this time. Gators were not perfect defensively by any means, but this time it was Florida that was making all the critical plays they had to make on defense. Offensively, Florida, you know, story of the year, got production from a lot of different sources. Zion Pullen had 19, and really just what a season he's had. What a pickup he's been for Florida from Riverside. Even just beyond the stat sheet, the way he moves on the court, the way he forces the defense to have to key in on him is just something that Florida's going to miss when he does leave. Tyree Samuel with a very different type of 19 points, just sort of backing his way down to the bucket and instilling his will in the paint. Or, well, not really the paint technically, because Florida doesn't actually paint the lane anymore. But you know what I mean. Will Richard with 23, including a couple of breakaway dunks and three threes. Walter Clayton with 22. And how about Alex Condon and Thomas Houck? 7 rebounds for each of them. And here's a bullet point for you stars don't matter people. 2 three-star prospects each went toe-to-toe with Big Bad Bama and pulled down 7 boards apiece. And now Florida has 1 game left. That is at Vanderbilt. Gators are sitting right at about a 6 or 7 seed in the NCAA tournament. I don't think they can quite move up any higher than a 5, and that they'd have to win a lot of games between now and Selection Sunday. But you know what? Keep playing this kind of basketball, and this is not a team you're going to want to face come March Madness. And, of course, we'll continue to talk about this team in the next couple of weeks. But for tonight, that's the show. If you enjoyed it, please like and subscribe on YouTube. Give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and tell your friends. And guys, we've got a lot of good stuff to talk about in the next couple of weeks with Gator baseball and Gator basketball. So definitely be sure to comment your thoughts on what you think of the Gator baseball and basketball team in this pod. And when we do football shows, maybe it won't be as sunshine and rainbowsy, but we want to hear from you nonetheless. So in all kinds of weather, we want this to be an interactive thing. So by all means, let us know what you think about the Gators in whatever topic we discuss. Go Gators. Till next time, big win.